Okay, so Baruch Hashem, you see the Sefer's around a little bit. I hope everybody else has the pages. We're on page 34 in Rav Aviner's Perush on Rav Kook's Hakdamah to Shabbos Haaretz. We're in the sugya of Skula and Bechira. Skula and Bechira. We spoke a little bit about how that connects to Shemitah. What we have to understand on a deeper level, we learned the Maharal, we were zeichet to learn a little bit from the Maharal in Netzach Yisrael Perek Yud Aleph, which is the foundation of Rav Kook's understanding of Skula and Bechira. As you remember, we were talking about in the Maharal how the Torah doesn't tell us why Avraham Avinu was chosen. The Torah doesn't tell us about anything that he did to earn, to be worthy of being the father of the Jewish people. Nothing at all was revealed to us. We have Midrashim, but nothing in the Torah speaks of Avraham Avinu's accomplishments that would earn that place as being Avraham Avinu. And we spent some time in that Maharal last week. And the basis of all of Rav Kook's teachings on this very, very important topic of Skula and Bechira is this Maharal, that the choice that Hashem made is not a choice because of A, B, or C. It's something that we can't understand, that Hashem created. Amzu Yatzarti Li, the same way He created heaven and earth, He created Am Yisrael. He created Am Yisrael. And He separated us. He separated us from the nations of the world. He infused within us this nature that we can't shake and we don't want to shake, this nature of Elokus, of godliness, that defines our very being, who we are. Of course, each individual Jew has to decide. Do I want to enjoy this choice that God made? God made a choice. God made a decision. The Baruch Shalom made that decision. For whatever reason, that predates creation. What's my take on that? Like, how do I want to ignore that? Chas v'shalom. How do I want to enjoy that and to use that in my life? That's a matter of my choice. Somebody can give you the most beautiful gift in the world, the most magnificent gift in the world. It belongs to you, it's yours. No one can take it from you. You'll live your entire life having that gift, and you'll die with that gift. But whether or not you open it up, you use it, you enjoy it, that's your choice. And that's what we're up to now. At the beginning of each year, it's kedai to review just in the English, if you have the English. You're able to get the English. I hope that it's on the online. So it's in, over here. Siv Zayin. I'll just review the English, Rav Kook's words, and we'll go right back into Rav Aviner's commentary, just to have the entire paragraph again. The essential quality of the Jewish people's collective soul is its divine nature. The people did not gain this characteristic through its choices, actions, righteousness, or good character. We didn't gain this or earn this. That's what we're learning from the Maharal. It is a core quality, both physical and spiritual, that gives the people divine force and strength. Now, physical, what does that mean? We're not going into right now. That's an interesting topic. Are Jews, do we have some physical qualities that make us different? In the Kisvei Ari, we find that Jews have a different amount of teeth than non-Jews. Now, I think, I don't know, I never counted my teeth. I know there are a couple of them missing right now. I never counted, but I think that any dentist would tell you that there's stamas the same amount of teeth. So it doesn't mean something that's visible. And when the Arizal said that there's a difference of one tooth between a Jew and a non-Jew, it means that there's something about the teeth and what that is. So what exactly are the physical distinctions? That's not for now. But spiritually, we understand it gives the people divine force and strength. It was not acquired through choice, and no choices can negate it. It was not acquired through choice, and no choices can negate it. You could scream and kick and yell, I'm not keeping Shabbos, I'll never keep Shabbos, I'm not interested in tefillin, I don't want to eat matzah, Pesach. You could scream and yell. But no choices can negate it. Now here's where we're up to, again in the English. Yesh lo omnam la habechira mova godel b'chol skula tivis. Of course, in the Hebrew. Yesh lo omnam la habechira mova godel b'chol skula tivis. Choices, however, can powerfully affect the state of this innate quality. Choices, good and bad choices, can powerfully affect the state of this innate quality. V'yosa tova tuchalefanka la'adna la'yitzia la'pol b'ofen shalem choshuv. The people can decide, each individual person and the nation can decide to nurture, develop, and perfect it. Alternatively, bad choices will darken its light, muddy its glow, and stupefy hearts so that they will no longer sense the spiritual riches hidden in the life of the soul. A person can, God forbid, make such poor choices that he simply becomes completely unaware that he bechlal has this treasure hidden in the life of the soul. But darkness and stupefaction cannot continue indefinitely. Eventually, you get to Hanukkah, eventually you find that. It has to be to, eventually every Jew is going to get to that jar of oil. Sooner or later, this inner soul treasure can be relied upon to arouse the nation to renewal. Sooner or later, the nation will discover that inner treasure, each individual Jew will discover that inner treasure, and it will arouse the nation to renewal, to his chadshus. Now let's look inside on page 34, the commentary. Yesh lom nam la b'chir mavo gol b'chol skul ativis. L'kol Yehuda v'Yehuda yesh merchav gadol shebechira ishes. Each individual Jew has a tremendous field of choices to make, a tremendous range of choices that we could make. U'b'yichol to lahot simen ha'koach el ha'poel, and if he so chooses and believes in all that we're learning, he's able to draw out from potential into the reality of his life to activate that godliness that is the treasure that was given to him, the gift that was given to him. He has the choice and he has the ability, every Jew has the ability to activate that, to bring that out, to access it, to make it part of his life. To get to it. Obviously, the Torah is the password. A life of Torah mitzvahs is the password to get into that site of who we are, the essence of who we are. Every single one of us. But of course, it's all a matter of free choice. That's how it's set up. So Rav Avinir compares this to a person who has innate, natural musical talent. There are people who they come to the world in such a way. People that have such a, that they come to the world with such a koyach. I have my daughter Shani, she should be well. She never took a music lesson in her life. She, from the time that she was a little girl, she hears a song, she sat down to the piano, she starts to play it. She never had any. Later on, my wife wanted to take this and to make it into the whole thing, so she got her a teacher. It was all right, no, it didn't. She never went with it into the whole thing. But we got a piano. Piano's gone by now, but she never took a lesson before. There's a talent that a person has. It's natural. Has a kishon musicali. But the fact that somebody has a natural, innate musical, they're in the shamas like that. Music comes from a very deep place, a very deep place. The second the guy gets up to daven v'yom, you can tell whether he's in or he's out. Right? So it comes from a deep place. And that doesn't mean that every person becomes, even the person that has gewaldige koiches of Nagina, doesn't mean that he becomes a Moshe Kosovitsky, you understand? Or Yossel Rosenblatt, that doesn't mean that. That takes a lot of work. He has an innate koyach of music, of chazanas, but there are a lot of people that want to be, you know, Yossel Rosenblatt, or that would like to be, you know, Yishai Rebo, or whatever. There are a lot of people that would like to do that, and they don't have the innate quality. There are other people that do have that innate quality, but they don't work at it. They don't develop it. Yamal v'yaba b'negina. If this musically inclined person works hard at it, because he feels that I'm good at this, I have a natural talent, and he or she wants to develop this, then it becomes something fantastic. But otherwise, you can go till 120, and you see that there's something special, that he or she has some sort of a chush for music, but doesn't mean that the person becomes any kind of a great composer or a musician. We'll get to the note afterwards. Rav Kook says, a person can make the decision that I want to nurture this. I want to develop this. He can make a good choice to nurture and to develop the talent that he has. The talent we're talking about here is elokus. That's the talent, the natural talent of a Jew is elokus. It's godliness. That's the natural talent of a Jew. I'm using the word talent. It's not really a kishon or a talent, but it's the natural quality of a Jew is elokus. It could be nurtured, it could be developed. But if a person makes bad choices, ushvala, and he makes low bad choices, tuchala hachshuch esam mo'or shebeskula hativis, he can darken the light of that natural, innate quality that he has, that treasure. V'lachar es zaro, he could muddy and pollute es zaro, its light, its or. Not only that, muddying it, making it dirty means that we see that some of the most destructive people who ever lived were Jews. I mean, it hurts to say that, but if you think about it, just it's not so nice to mention in a place of Kedusha, but Karl Marx made such a horrible, the world is still reeling in pain from what that guy did with his partner Engels Zohid. And if you go back further, you have the one who was hanging on the cross. You understand? It's a horrible gemacht. Came from this person. Such a horrible. They're tremendous, tremendous kaiches. I've told you many times. The Rav Kook got into huge trouble in Yerushalayim because he in the Oris he writes about the charisma and the or of Isa Ha'ish, of the one from Nazareth. He writes about it in a very, very strong way, that he was a person of tremendous charm, tremendous kaiches, tremendous spirituality. So right away, you know, of course, in Yerushalayim, they jump, they stop the set, like, you know, like how nowadays they take out a clip. You ever see such a thing? They'll take out like a minute from something. So they took out from Rav Kook's Torah, they took out those words, and all of Yerushalayim signs, quoting, Rav Kook said that Yeshua Hanotzi, that the Nazarene, is Gevaldik. And that's it, like, right, he's Gevaldik. Like I told you once, there was this record. Every time I think of this, it makes me laugh and remember how there was a Yiddish comedian. I just forgot his name for a second. He was a Yiddish comedian, and he had these records from him. You know, the older people remember, they would crackle. You know, you put on the record, and this comedian, David, don't put the coffee with this farm. And this comedian had a shtick. He had this record. It was once a year. My father, Olav Shalom, my uncle, and his brother, Olav Shalom, they used to listen to this record. And we knew that this was like that, the laughing. And once a year, they had like a Seder that they listened to this record. Emil Cohen, his name was. He used to go to Miami. There was this one thing where there was a yid that was accused. This chassid yid was accused of stealing a chicken. And he never did chas v'shalom. And they took him. He was accused, and they brought him to court. And he was sitting in the court. And he had to have an interpreter because he didn't speak a word of English. So he had an interpreter that was translating. And the judge said to the interpreter, "Ask the rabbi, why did he steal the chicken?" So the interpreter says, "For us, it could gone with the chicken. Why did you?" He says, "Was bin a chaganev? Ich hab gegangen wie a chicken." So he translates, "I'm a thief, I stole the chicken." And it goes on and on like this. You know, one thing you have to, each thing, he answers, it's been Haganov. I am a thief, I told you. I am a thief. And the whole thing keeps on going until finally at the end, the judge himself yells at them both in Yiddish. It's like the whole joke. So, you could take out from Rav Kook those words, but he said that the Nazarene, the Notzri, was a person of tremendous koiches. Why? Because he had that gift. He had the niggun, you understand? That's what Rav Kook was saying. He wasn't saying, I like the guy. If you want to find anybody in modern times who wrote as much negative stuff about that person, from that Tzaris, you want to find, it was Rav Kook. He held the Christianity as the ikar tumah in all of creation is Christianity. But what he was saying was that the reason that Jew was so successful and was able to make a kishif, the whole world crazy, that to this day, you got people spending so much money on getting an outfit for the Pope, is because he had such gewaldige koiches. He was a person of unbelievable koiches, spiritual energy. But what he did with that, he made a poor choice. He went into the darkest places of Tumah. But he had tremendous koiches. And Marx wasn't a person that had gifts. He was a gifted person. These were gifted people. And Freud also made the whole world mishige. He was a genius. Freud was a genius. But he had a whole mahalach in understanding the human mind that's very perverse and very distorted, which by now it's already, it's not really taken seriously. But he was a genius. He had tremendous koiches. These are great people. How you use the koiches? So a person can Rav Kook says, can make it dirty, can muddy and pollute that light of the soul, of the gift. So Jews are very strong people. We're very gifted people. Not the way they say that we're gifted, that the Jews are smart and the Jews are gifted. But the ikka gift that the Jewish people have is a lukus, spirituality. But when that is used in a unholy way, it's like Moshe Rabbeinu said, like, whoa, what's the matter with them? Jews could cause such a churban. Can make such a churban. L'tamte mesalev l'val yochush es oisha haruchni, that a person can numb the heart to such a degree that he doesn't even feel the spiritual treasure, that he doesn't even know that he has this gift. He doesn't feel it inside of him. That's hidden in the life of the soul. However, this numbness and this darkness cannot continue forever. At the end, every Jew will discover that treasure, will find that treasure. At the end, he'll find it. It might not be in this lifetime. It might have to be revealed to him after his life. And how all of that works, that's not for now. But at the end, it's lo yidach mena nidach. At the end, it's going to be clear.
Didn't that do such terrible things? Isn't there repercussions?
Yes, I said, I don't want to get into the repercussions, but of course there are repercussions. And he has to go through certain things to be cleansed and to be purified and to be able to be in a place where he's able to enjoy the gift that he botched up during his lifetime. Sure, there are things that there are repercussions. There are dinim. Sure, there are repercussions, but at the end, it'll have a happy ending. The Arizal said even about Oseh Hish that we were talking about a minute ago, but from over there from Netzaris, he wasn't from Beis Lechem, he was from Nazareth, and the Arizal says that he also is going to have a tikkun. But the Arizal, they were afraid to put his name in Yerushalayim on a poster. You understand? That already they've given. But the Arizal said he has a tikkun also. 50,000 yovels it's going to take till he has a tikkun. I mean, it's a work in process. Progress. It's a work in progress. 50,000 yovels for the mess that he made. Yeah. Long haul. 50,000 yovels. Because he was such a big person. No, we can't mess up like that. You get a slap in a couple of weeks. Good behavior. It's a shame. We had him parole. But he messed up big. Very big. 50,000 yovels. But he has a tikkun. He's a yid. In the end, it's going to be good for him too. It's going to have a happy ending for him also. And we know that the tzaddikim, how much the Baal Shem Tov was trying to be pale to bring out neshamas of Rishon, but the tzaddikim, the Arizal and the Baal Shem Tov, the big, big, big tzaddikim, the regular people don't do this, but there were big tzaddikim, the Baal Shem Tov worked so hard to try to make a tikkun for Shabbos, Tzvi Yimach Shemai, and for Frank, he tried to make, for Jacob Frank, he tried to make a tikkun for these neshamas of the biggest Rishon, and he suffered a lot because of that. Because he, why did the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh care about Shabbos Tzvi Yimach Shemai? Why did he care about Jacob Frank Yimach Shemai? What do you work with these people to? Why did the Baal Shem Tov want so badly to make a tikkun? Because the Baal Shem Tov understood that these were big, big, big neshamas. These were Rishayim. They were big neshamas. And it wasn't just, these are big neshamas, that he knew that if in some way he could grab them and bring them out, whatever that means, that it would be a tremendous R. And it would be a tremendous Elokus that would be revealed through these Rishayim. They had gewaldige karkas of Elokus. We think Shabbos says he was a plain person. He wasn't. He made the biggest Rabbanim. The biggest people in the world thought that he was Mashiach. That's not an easy thing to do. He was a great person, but he made bad choices. So the tzaddikim, like the Baal Shem Tov and other tzaddikim that were working on these, they tried very hard to find some way, whatever that means. We're not talking about, we don't know what that is, how do you make such tikkun. But he wanted to, and he suffered terribly from that. Another tzaddikim that they were, the Arizal, he was Isaac and tikkunim. Spending his time with all these things, with neshamas from the other world, trying to find some way to accelerate the tikkunim that they were going through and move things along. So Rav Aviner explains, Lo nitan livgod b'teva shel adam. It's not possible. It's not possible for a person to forever livgod b'teva, to deny, to rebel against, to reject, to ignore who he is. You can't do that. You can't do that. At some point, the real you has to come out. You could try, and you hold it back, and you hide it, and you run from it, but it's not possible for a person to do that forever. Lo nitan livgod b'teva shel adam lo dake osa, to crush it, to go against it. When a parent does that to a kid, or a rebbe to a, or a teacher to a child, it destroys the person. It destroys the person. The person has a certain teva, has a certain teva nature. The tachlis is how to help that person with that teva, that's different than yours. Make choices. Make good choices. And to nurture that which the child has, to nurture that, not to crush it, because then it'll just come out in bad ways. It's going to come out. It's just it could have come out in beautiful ways. Now it's going to come out in terrible ways. So the kid that has that's artistic, he could have been painting beautiful things of Kedusha to inspire people, beautiful paintings of Yerushalayim, and it was that talent was crushed and. And he ends up painting other things that are not of Kedusha, so, or it could even be bad things. But the teva is something you can't ignore, and you can't try to crush. It'll make the person, first it'll make the person sick and miserable. And then at some point it comes out. It just comes out in all kinds of strange ways. But you can't just go on forever without that teva expressing itself. It has to be expressed. It has to come out. That's why Sof Yisrael Asas Tshuva. In the end, all the Jewish people are going to do Tshuva and come back to Hashem. How? What? And what's going to bring it? But in the end, everybody has to come back. It can't continue on like that. It can't go on like that. And I told you once that I heard this story from this from a Talmud Chacham that this was he's no longer alive. This person, and he was did a lot to help in Eretz Yisrael. He was an Israeli. He did a lot to bring many Jews back to Hashem Yisbarach. And it was a whole ma'aseh, but I don't know what take time on the ma'aseh, but the story was he got into this, there was a secular Israeli, a real strong chiloni, and he got angry at this rabbi, because the rabbi was taking down some sign that was hung up, that the Jews should be free to go and do what they want on Shabbos, and you know, against kfiyah datit, you know, religious coercion. And this rabbi stopped, and he was trying to take the sign down. And some guy was driving by, and a chiloni, a secular Israeli, and he got out of the car, and he gave it to this rabbi. He started screaming and yelling. I heard this in the rabbi. He started screaming and yelling at him, "Who do you think you are? You're a ganav, and you're destroying the property, and this is a free country, and you religious people destroying the whole country." And while he's yelling at him, so the rabbi starts to laugh and laugh and laugh. And the guy yells and he says, "Matatzochek, what are you laughing at?" So he says, so the rabbi said to him, "I'm laughing because you're such a geshmaki yid. Like, you have such tremendous koiches, and I'm just thinking how when you're going to come back and you're going to daven, how it's going to be like such a davening. You're going to be such a davener." And he said, the guy calmed down a little bit. And he said, "Matam shuga." And the rabbi, they were not far from Haifa. The rabbi lived in Yerushalayim, but they were not far from Haifa. And he asked him, "Where do you live?" He says, "In Haifa." And the rabbi gave him, he says, "I have a brother in Haifa. Let me give you his phone number if you ever want to go for a Shabbos. Let me give him a..." He says, and the guy says, "Ah, it's Shabbat. And Yeshli Shabbat. And Mutzecha Shabbat Shacha." And in the meantime, he took the kvittel, you understand? The tzettel. He took it. And the rabbi said, I heard this from him. He said that almost a year later, his brother called him to say, "I got some Jew that gave me a call. And he's coming to me for Shabbos. He said that he met you on the highway." And the end of the story is that he screams by davening. This guy screams by davening. So he's a hot-headed guy. He's got a teva like that. And of course, the tzaddik saw that this is a teva that wants to daven and scream, but he doesn't know what that is. So he screams at people, he yells about the other things. But this is his teva. It's his teva. Shibasof shel dover, hateva yachzav yisparis. At the end, teva has to explode. There's only so long you could repress that. Teva comes out. Now the scary thing about that Yid Freud, the scary thing is that he had a certain understanding of what the teva of a person is. And he said that teva has to come out, which was sick. And he therefore came to the belief, and he wrote big fat books that nobody reads anymore. They were, at that time, that was like the height of everything. But he wrote big fat books to say that in the end, you should know that in the end, you're going to have to be a mushkas. The self-dover of a human being is a mushkas, a low person. That's the self-dover. You can only make believe that you're a mensch. You can only make believe that you're a moral, decent person. But seif kol seif, you're gonna end up being a mushkas. Because that's your tev. The tev is your mushkas. Kishem, but you see, it was rejected. That the world rejected that. And there were very few people that still hold from that whole thing. The world couldn't hear that. Even the secular non-Jewish world couldn't hear such a thing, that this is the teva. Most of the world believes that there was a certain thing as Adam and Gan Eden, there was Adam and Chavu and Gan Eden, and to believe that that's the teva of a person to be a mushkas, you know, the world wasn't makabel it. The world rejected it. The same way the world rejected Darwin in the essence of what he was saying. The world wasn't makabel it. For a time it was fashionable, but the world couldn't be makabel it. The world couldn't be makabel that was such a metzias that a human being comes from. The world couldn't be makabel. And man's natural humanity couldn't accept such a thing, rejected that. Not just Jews, but the world couldn't be makabel such a thing. It didn't depend on scientific proofs, even though there are so many against it. Just the teva of a human being can't be makabel such a thing. That's why even now, with all the insanity that the world is going through, it's going to reset. It's going to reset. It's not because the teva of a simple person, even somebody who's not the Ben Bris, who's not Jewish, a fine person, can't be makabel the things that are going on, the things that are happening now, and the things that It can't be macabre. It's just
the world's so immoral. That's why
the world.
The world is very into that being immoral.
Into immorality, right, but there's the teva of a human being is to be moral, not to be an animal. And therefore, it could be fashionable. It could be exciting. It can give you an excuse to do all kinds of averis and to go through all kinds of taivas. But it can't last. And even in the world, not just with Am Yisrael, it can't last. There's only so much that a human being can go away from his basic instincts and his basic nature. And the basic nature of a human being, even an Eino Yehudi, is not to be an animal. There are animals. The Baruch Hashem created animals. A human being is not an animal. A human being is created B'Tzelem Elokim. He's not an animal. So you see all kinds of perverse things going on. The world's a Meshuggah. The world is Meshuggah. It's not. It can't be like that. It can't go on like that. So Hashem said, "There's not going to be another flood." There are other ways that, but it can't. It can't go on in such a way. The things that you hear, the things we can't continue in such a way. What?
It doesn't mean it's going to be rectified. It could be destroyed.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like the marble, the flood destroyed.
It's dying in all these places.
Nachon. By us, it's going to be a tikkun. Ultimately, even though a person, like we said, a person has to go through, Chalila can go through terrible destruction too, and all kinds of punishments, Chalila, but there'll be, in the end, there'll be a tikkun. When it comes to the world, yes, something can be eliminated and destroyed. And that itself is a tikkun. When it's eliminated, like a Shara Niskel, it's eliminated, finished, gone. But it can't continue on and on and on. For infinity in such a mahalach. It can't continue. The world can't continue on in such a way. So either it's going to be a stom, a chorban, or there'll be a tikkun. But it can't go on like that forever. It can't go on like that forever. And he says, Kishem shekvitz shedoichik emoisai, yoisei v'yoisei, the same way you take a spring and you push it and you hold it back, koifet shuv achutza. When you let go, it jumps. So of Cook's words, Haskula hativis bituchahi bikiyuma ubisarerusa l'schia. This natural character of the Jewish people of Elokus, it's guaranteed that it will be kiyuma. It's guaranteed that it's going to exist, and that sooner or later it's going to be revived. It's going to be discovered, and it's going to be revived. It's going to spring back. You could have a Jew could have a slump. A Jew could have a slump. You can go through a bad slump, but in the end, it's going to come back. And when we come back, it's going to be gewaldig. It's going to be like a spring that jumps because of all of the years. Like the way Rav Kook explains in the Haggadah, which we've spoken about over the years, that by the Seder, the first thing that we by the Seder is Holach Ma'anya. So everybody's talking about that. Why do you start the Haggadah Halach Ma'anya? Number one. Number two, all the Mepharshim are asking that by the Korban Pesach, you can't invite outsiders by the Korban Pesach. You have to already designate everybody before. So there's no new company, except for Leonovi, you know, but otherwise the Olam is already here. By the Korban Pesach, you can't open up the door and have somebody from the outside come now to the Korban Pesach. So what are you beginning? Everybody is invited to come. What's the invitation? Who are you inviting? You're sitting there with the guests or your family. You're not inviting anybody. So Rav Kook has a beautiful piece in the Siddur, in the Haggadah, on Halach Manya. He says that, of course, you're not inviting anybody. What he says is like this, that we were slaves for such a long time, and the natural kindness and goodness and hospitality of the Jewish people was crushed, was held back for so long, that the second that you're free, you just scream out, everybody come. Not because anybody's going to come. You just, for years, you weren't a balabas. You didn't have your own home. You weren't a free person that could invite anybody. You had nothing. And the nature of a Jew is to be kind and to open up his home. So, therefore, Rav Kook says that there's this outburst at the beginning of the Seder, kol dichvin, kol ditzvich. Kol dichvin, kol ditzvich. Not because there's, practically speaking, somebody coming in now, but it's a natural instinct of a Jew to say, "I, whoever needs, I'm here for you. I'm here for you." It's a tev of a person. It's a tev of Am Yisrael to be kind. And there's only so long that the Am Yisrael can be held back from its natural instincts. It can be held back. And that's why when you look in this Sfar HaKadosh, the whole inyan of chinuch, especially if you look in the Chavos HaTalmidim from the Eish Kodesh, the Pius Etzner, the whole yisod of chinuch is really, it's like mostly just leave the kid alone. That's the yisod of it. Just leave him alone. That doesn't mean you don't tell him to brush his teeth and to make his bed, but it means leave him alone, recognize, understand who he is, and just try to keep that who he is as much as you can, to try to, with seichel, to give direction, because the kid doesn't understand. So to try to explain and to help how he can use those natural talents that he has. But not to try to bend him or to break him. The Briskerov was sitting with a big Rosh Shiva, came to visit the Briskerov. Now, you know, the Briskerov was not known as being like an easygoing type of person. So the Briskerov was sitting, this big Rav came and was to the Briskerov, and they were talking and learning. Doesn't say who the Rav was, but he was talking to the Briskerov and learning, and the Briskerov had Einiklach there. And, you know, and he didn't have a big house. And the Einiklach, the grandchildren, are making a balagan. They're knocking things over, and they're screaming, and they're fighting. And this Rav that was talking to the Briskerov got angry. And he screamed at the kids. He said, "Still! Quiet! Like, can't you see we're learning?" And the Briskerov said to him, the Briskerov said to this Rav, he said, "The natural instincts of a human being are to be happy and to play. Those are the natural instincts. What are you doing?" That's what he said. Now, that came, if you heard that from like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, you would say, "Oh, of course, that's like a Lubavitcher art." But the Briskerov, Zechut Tzad V'Kodesh L'Vraha, the Briskerov, it's not a Chassidish of art, it's Jewish. It's not just Jewish. It's human. It's a basic, it's 001 human being, that this is who he is. So was the Briskerov saying, you can't discipline children, you should let kids break everything in the house? The Briskerov wasn't saying that. But the Briskerov, we understand, the Briskerov heard in the anger of this Ravi, and the way that he did that, he heard something that was unhealthy. That's why the Briskerov told him, "Leave them alone. We could learn. The kids are okay. They should be playing. They should be running around. That's what children are supposed to do." And that's why, and you know that the second we started putting them to buildings and locking them in and all of that, then that's when all the problems. They shouldn't be in any of this stuff. All these things are big bedevas. All the buildings and classrooms and blackboards. All bedevas. I'm looking like this. There's a blackboard. So all, I still have that in me. It's a skin. It's all bedevah. It's all. Does that mean so? Am I saying we're not supposed to teach children? Of course, we're supposed to teach children. But there's a way to teach the child that it should be in that mahalach of who the child is. Are there some children that need a classroom and a blackboard? For sure. Are there others that don't? Yeah. There are different types, but we put everybody together in one mahalach. At least in Eretz Yisrael, in the schools, in the Batei Sefer, they have like a math track and a liberal arts track. I don't know if they still do that, but when I was a kid and I lived in Eretz Yisrael, you could decide whether you want Humani, was the humanities, or Reali, or it was called Reali, like realism, was the sciences. Did you ever meet a kid, tell me the truth, you ever meet a kid in your life who was made miserable because of math? Math. Math, that word math, or you want to say arithmetic, whatever you like to call it. There are children whose lives are embittered from math. Now, I wasn't embittered by it. I preferred poetry and history, personally, but math didn't make me crazy. But my sister she suffered from that, with the tutors and with this and that, to understand trigonometry. Since we did trigonometry, which is, I think, in 10th grade, I never in my life saw a cosine personally. I mean, I'm not an architect. I don't know, but I never had anything with a tangent. I don't even remember what they're called. And looking up in the back of the book and what this one equals that and what is. And I asked the teacher once. He got angry at me. I said, "What is that? Show me one of these things. What are they?" He was a firm guy. He says, "Mechutzav." I said, "I'm just asking. I don't know what that is. We spent the whole year on this thing. I don't know what that is." And I was doing it. I was good at it. I did all the formulas, and it came in. And there's a certain satisfaction that when you get it right, right? There's a certain satisfaction. But I asked, I don't know what was the whole time. So there are people that children that are crushed by math. And then you got others that are mathematical kids, and they're crushed by Shakespeare. It kills them. So why does he talk like that? It's a good kasha. It's a good kasha. When you read that stuff, so why can't you talk regular? Why does he talk that way? That the teacher has to say, you have to translate the English into English and what he's talking about, and it's all kinds of drush and sud in what this mushlis was saying, and to explain in English what he's saying in English. Why can't you just say it? Talk like a regular person. There's a whole school, by the way. There's a school of thought that felt that to get back, in the 19th century, to get back to that the poetry should be in very straightforward, direct, and simple English, which we saw in some of the famous poets, that there was a tshuva in that direction, to go back to saying things in a more clear, straightforward way. But you're taking something that's not natural. It's not natural. And that cannot continue on and on. It just can't go. See, you're taking somebody that doesn't have a mathematical mind. Can you train the person to pass the regions or to even do well in the regions? You can. But there's a cost. There's an expense. At the same time, we're not talking that there's anarchy. So this is what brought about this, this whole machlokes with educators about how to deal with this stuff. So what do you do with a kid that hates math? So at least in Eretz Yisrael, they said, you don't have to take math. I don't know if they still do that. But in high school, they gave you an option not to be in a mathematical track. You could go to the humanities, and then you over there, you do Bialik and stuff, whatever. You don't have to be in math. There are people that their whole confidence is completely broken by that. The same way you have a kid. If you have a boy that's not athletic, he's one of those boys that he's not good at sports, and the chevra, to be successful as a kid, as a boy, you have to be good at that. And they say, you take short right field or something, or they put you on the bench, you'd be like the 50th person that gets, and you get to hold the ball for 1 second and they take it away from you. What does that do to a child? What does it do to a child that's not athletic? And when it comes to learning, what does that do to a child that doesn't have a certain head for it? What does that do to a child? We see the outcome, what it does to children, what happens to them. There's only so much you could try to bend and break a person. Because it's not the natural teva, so if Cook says, and that's what he's explained, that it has to come back. At some point, there's a rebellion against that. Now, how that rebellion takes place, it could take place in all different forms, how one rebels against the oppressor, the ones who are oppressing you, the one who is forcing you out of your name, the one who's holding the spring down. There are all different ways of rebellion, all different ways of fighting against that. So he says, it has to come back. The nature of the Jewish people has to spring back. Okay, Rav Avinir, of course, is very big on this, as you know. The return to Eretz Yisrael, he says, it's something that has to take place. There's only so long that the Jewish people, I mean, we're all big on this, but by him it's very, very strong. I'm not saying that as criticism. I say that as by way of envy. that he has such a tremendous, powerful Ahavasiyon. So what he's saying is that there's only so long, the Maral says this, there's only so long that we can, at the very beginning of Netzach Yisrael, that's what he says. Parak Aleph of Netzach Yisrael. Where he explains that Golus and Gula have the basic same two letters of Gimel Lamed, just the difference between the Hay and the Aleph. Golus and Gula. And the Maral explains, there's only so long that you could stay away from the place that's your home. Because the connection of a Jew to Israel is encoded into our existence. And the truth is that we can't completely flourish outside of Eretz Yisrael. That's why we can't have Nevuah outside of Eretz Yisrael. We can't really be ourselves outside of Eretz Yisrael. Lahavdil, the person is not really himself when he's not in his home. So at some point, we must return. It's not a matter of... We have to return. Because there's only so long that the natural instinct of a Jew to live in Eretz Yisrael doesn't have to be Yishalayim, it could be anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, but that natural instinct of a Jew, there's only so long that spring could be held back, and then, ding, we go back to Eretz Yisrael. You can't. How long can a person live in the five towns? How long can you live in Brooklyn or in Muncie or Monroe? How long can we live in Poland? How long can we live in these places? So this skula hativis, this natural character of the Jewish people, that it's Yerushalayim, that it's Yisrael, it's reduma. It could be dormant. It could be dormant for a long time. That means reduma means like sleeping. It could be dormant. B'meshach tkufa arucha. It could even be dormant for a long period of time. But v'hisparetz mechadash. But in recent history, it exploded. Came out again. Such a thing. Even by people who are not from. There came out such a thing of Shiva Sion. Exploded. Imkain. La'am Yisrael yesh teva eloki. So the Jewish people have this teva eloki, this godly nature. She'd be a baribana shalom that Hashem infused in us. He created us that way. Teva zehu chayiv shalom Yisrael. And this teva, this nature, is the life of the Jewish people. Hu ashur shalom Yisrael, it's our fortune, our joy. Simchas shalom Yisrael. Kol yochid mi yichidei ha'uma garim l'haslachas v'midahu v'hu ne'man lo'isei teva shal knesses Yisrael. And to the degree that a person is loyal and faithful to his nature, so too he'll be able to contribute to this godliness of the Jewish people and to the godly life of the Jewish people if he's faithful to his nature, to his teva. Omnam adam yochal liv god b'teva shalo. However, a person can rebel against his nature. Not only that someone else is holding you back from your teva, but you yourself could rebel against that nature. Will this alam imenu, or to ignore it? Ach lo yuchal lishanas his teva. But you cannot change your teva. You cannot change your teva. Kishem shodam eni yuchal lahafach lebal chai. The same way that a person cannot become an animal. Gam im yisnaik balchaim, even if you act like an animal, you can't become an animal. I mean, there are a lot of people that try very hard, but you can't become an animal. You could imitate an animal, but you can't become one. Bishum shenivra b'tzelem elokim, because a human being is created in God's image. Kach gam yehudi eni ochel yimalik mitzelem elokim ham yuchat shel am yisrael. So too a Jew cannot forever and ever hide and run away from this teva of elokus, of godliness. This is called skula. That's the meaning of an am skula. That's the skula, that's the treasure. Haskula ha-yisraelis, hi yisod kol ha-torah kula. This skula is the yisod of all of Yiddishkeit. Vigam ha-psichol inyone ha-shmita, and it's Rav Kook's introduction to all the inyonim of shmita, which is what this sefer is about, Shabbos Aretz. It's a halacha sefer, but this introduction is about the pnimius of what Shemitah is. This inyan of bechira, of skula, and bechira. What's most famous is the letter that he wrote to the Ritbaz from Tzvas, who was an old friend of his that they learned together in Volozhin. And the Ritbaz was, we once read parts of this letter. It's a very, very famous letter. It's in English also, so you can get it, I'm sure, in a second online. The letter that he wrote to the Ritbaz. But the Ritbaz was very, very upset with how Rav Kook was Isaac so much with Jews that were not religious, with the Chilonim, with the Chalutzim, that he was very busy with working with these people. And the Ritbaz was very strong, was a very big kanoi, a huge Talmid Chacham and Tzaddik, but he was very upset with his old friend for being Isaac with these people who were rebelling against Yiddishkeit and Chalei Shabbos. And that's where Rav Kook wrote in this long letter, he wrote about the inyan of Skula and Bechira. And he said, those who learn this, the Pnimius of Torah, who learn or are connected to the inner light of Torah, they're connected to this, they have this understanding that there's a Skula of the Jewish people, the inner light of the Jewish people. Those who don't, just identify Jews by the choices that they make, but not the inner Skula, not the inner quality, the inner light. Just by the choices they make, good or bad. If somebody makes good choices, he's great. If somebody makes bad choices, he's bad. Rav Kook says that I'm connected to the inner light of Torah, and I invite you to join me into that world. And in that world of the inner light of Torah, we're very, very focused. We're not ignoring the poor choices that people make, but we're very focused on, no matter what the choices are, that there is a Skula Tivis, the Skula. In some people, the Skula is strong and the choices are weak. In other people, the choices are very strong and the Skula, the light of the Skula, is very weak. That's what Rav Kook writes. And that's even generationally. Even generationally. We'll see. He talks about it here also. That there are certain generations where the Skula is shining stronger, but the choices are the Bechira is weak, and other times where the Bechira is strong and the Skula is weak. And we'll talk about it a little bit. All right, we'll stop here. Next time we'll begin. I wanted to do footnote 5, so we'll start that Erev Shabbos Chanukah, Mitzvah Shem.